Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Call Talk for Wednesday, June 16th. Our topic today is compensation strategies for agents and supervisors. During the call, we invite you to ask questions via email at calltalk@benchmarkportal.com or chat on calltalk.tv if you're logged into our program. You can also call in and ask the host your questions and interact with the show. The number to call in is 347-857-3117. That number is also on calltalk.tv if you're logged in case you forget the number. Everyone who asks a question via email or phone on the show will receive a free copy of Bruce's book, Benchmarking at Its Best, and one person will be chosen at random to win an in-depth reality check benchmarking report valued at $1,500. Remember, Call Talk is an offered as a service to our best practice community and is free of vendor content. And now I'd like to introduce the host of Call Talk, Bruce Belfiore.
Thank you very much, Sean, and welcome back to Call Talk, everyone. Before I begin, I just want to give a quick shout-out for a special survey we're launching on workforce optimization. All the listeners on our email list should be getting their invitation shortly, and we really urge you to open and take the survey, which is it's definitely longer than our usual OMS, one-minute survey, but I guarantee it'll pay you back big time in terms of a free report full of a lot of juicy best practices information on workforce management and optimization. So please keep an eye out and complete it when you get it. Okay, well, listen, our listeners chose today's topic, agent and supervisor compensation. And this is actually a good time to address this topic because a lot of you will be doing your budgeting during the summer and fall. Any changes to something like compensation generally need some lead time to work through the system. So if you hear something today that you'd like to present, you've got time to do it for 2011. So we figured this was a good time to do that. So I'd like to welcome our co-host for the call, John Chatterley. He's an industry expert who's been on the program before. He has over 30 years of experience in really every aspect of call center industry, from building them to staffing them to compensating them, studying them, and writing about them. He's the author and content editor of a number of articles, white papers, and books. So welcome back to Call Talk, John.
Well, thank you, Bruce. It's good to be here.
Good. So you want to talk about agent compensation?
Well, actually, Bruce, I'd prefer to talk about call center expert compensation.
Okay, well, me too. I'll tell you what, we'll get you a gift card honorarium for Starbucks. How's that?
Well, I don't drink coffee, so
well,
see if you can do better than that.
Okay. Darn it, I was going to give you double shots on all of the lattes as a performance incentive. Well, anyway, John, let me ask you, how do most call centers look at compensation? And in your opinion, how should they look at compensation?
Well, most call centers still look at things very conventionally. That is to say, they see what the market will bear in the labor pool or the geographical area they're located, and then they tend to set their compensation to be just slightly better than the call center down the street. What they should see compensation as is a corollary to their overall strategy and mission. So I ask everyone on this show to ask themselves, what is my mission statement? What are our goals? And does our compensation strategy uphold and promote the mission and the goals in a concrete fashion? If not, change something.
Yeah, that's. I think that's good advice. A lot of times we forget that we always should check all our management decisions against our mission statement and our strategies for the call center. And we find in many cases that the compensation approach really does not fit with the company's mission statement or with what they're trying to accomplish. Well, tell us some more, John, from the studies that you've done, et cetera.
Well, we've done several studies over the past year and a half. We did a compensation survey about a year ago, And we got some interesting results out of it. One of the things we noticed was that the compensation is traditionally male. Here comes the gender bias. Male agents, supervisors, managements earn more than their female counterparts with the same job title.
That's interesting. And what is the gap? We wouldn't sort of expect in 2010 to still be seeing that, but how much is that gap, John?
Based on our survey results, that gap ranges about 10%.
10%. Okay, so maybe a little less than some time ago, but still kind of surprising that it's still there, and probably something that the listeners to this program should be aware of, too, just to make sure that they avoid being unfair, which is the main thing. You want to do the right thing by your people. And second, there's also a liability aspect that could come in if really there's a gender bias on a systematic basis. Interesting, John. Okay, what else do we have?
Well, a couple of other interesting findings. One that I found particularly interesting was that where incentive compensation is concerned, the highest incentives seem to be those incentives tied to performance or to tenure, that is time on the job or performance, and lowest incentive has to do with customer satisfaction performance, that is to say, tying the level of customer satisfaction survey scores to the agents who service them. Only 5% of those that responded indicated that they include that as part of their compensation strategy.
Okay, wow, those are very interesting numbers. Well, let's take those each separately and analyze them in a way that could be useful for our audience. So if we've got the longer-term people getting paid higher, there can be two dynamics going on there. One is that longer-term people tend to be more experienced and therefore hopefully more efficient and therefore be worth a higher pay. Also, there's sort of an expectation or a hope as we sort of move through our careers and through life that there will be increases that will keep us loyal to the company. And we all know that the cost of turnover is high enough, so it might warrant a strategy in which you have higher pay to keep your good people as they mature in their jobs. And, John, just in terms of the cost of turnover, which our audience could use in terms of doing some calculations on that, we've had sort of studies that have shown $6,000 to $7,000 is the average cost per turnover. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's what it costs them to recruit, hire, and train a replacement representative. And actually, that cost is just a monetary figure based on what it costs them to hire somebody new to fill a position. But it doesn't take into account the legacy experience that the person who left took with them, and that you can't put a price on it, but it's one of those invisible costs that can drive the cost, the net cost of hiring or of high turnover, that can drive the net cost of replacement up quite a bit.
Okay, so there's some logic here, and as long as we're not facing the other side of the coin, which is retired in place people who are just sort of long tenured, not really doing that great a job, but getting more money simply because they've been there for a longer period of time, then it's justifiable. In the case where we have non-performers who are getting higher pay, then really we should be looking at the coaching out instead of coaching up type of situation, unless we can find some way to in fact motivate those people to re-energize and to do a good job.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Right. Okay. And the second thing that you were talking about, let's dig down into that as well, the Sorry, could you just repeat that again?
if my memory serves me correctly, I think the second thing that I mentioned was that I'm fumbling here because frankly I can't remember what the second.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. No, because there's a lot of good stuff here. So, in terms of being able to justify, higher wages for tenured people, that's important. There's also skill levels, right? One of the other bases on which people will have differentiated pay. Oh, I'm sorry. No, the second thing that you were mentioning had to do with incentive pay, and that only 5% had that. Okay, good. We're back on track, right?
Yes, we are. Thank you for reminding. Maybe I do need a cup of coffee after.
That's right. I'll send the shot your way. Because now that's very interesting that such a low proportion include incentive comp. Any thoughts on that, John?
Well, incentives, as long as incentives are tied to the mission statement and the goal of the center, I think they're good. And in fact, I think they're a very necessary motivator to tie the performance of the center into the performance of the agents themselves with respect to their mission and to offer them incentives that get them there. There's nothing worse than having an incentive program that is completely disassociated with the goals of the company. And to go back to something I mentioned a little earlier, if the goal of the company is to attract and retain customers, then customer service should be one of the highest components of their incentive program.
Absolutely. And let me just talk about one situation that we dealt with last year and that worked out very well, where we were trying to apply our balanced scorecard approach to call center metrics to individual agents and to their compensation. So the balanced scorecard approach means that you look at both those metrics that relate to quality, so customer satisfaction, first call resolution, that kind of thing, and on the other hand, the cost-related metrics. And so in this particular case, and perhaps this could apply to a lot of people in the audience, we took certain metrics that the agent had to, quote-unquote, pass in order to be eligible for incentive pay. Once they passed those quality metrics, they were eligible for some very attractive incentives with regard to the quantity of calls they took. So this obviously requires a call center that is well-structured, has good reporting, and has good customer satisfaction metrics and ways of measuring. So in that case, if they had the appropriate customer satisfaction score, they also had the appropriate quality score from their monitors, they had the appropriate attendance record and adherence records. Those were the barriers that they had to get through. That was sort of passing the post. If they had the appropriate levels for all of those metrics, then they were able to make more money based on the number of calls per hour that they made. And what we did was to help the center figure out what the cost, or actually the savings would be in terms of upping the number of calls taken per hour. And we basically took that, split it down the middle between the company and the agents, and the agents were able to make more money, actually considerably more money if they were good, because they were operating at a kind of a so-so level, to be frank. And it meant that they it was important as well for their supervisors to coach them in techniques to have lower talk times, lower handle times, without compromising quality and without compromising customer satisfaction. So that all worked, and it can be very satisfying. And if that's the kind of program that you think could work in your center, then you know, it's something you probably should be thinking about now for 2011. John, back over to you. Any thoughts?
Well, I think that's a very effective strategy. That the talk straight or goes straight to the point of tying compensation and incentives to the overall mission of the call center, and mm-hmm. And I applaud and endorse that approach. I think that generally should be applied clear across the industry. But what I'm wondering is, you know, what are our audience, our listening audience, thinks about that, and what their experiences are. So, let me just throw in the invitation that if any of you out there have thoughts along these lines or on this topic, please call in and give us the benefit of your thoughts, your thinking, questions that you'd like to ask, and so forth.
Okay, very good. In fact, Sean indicates that we have some questions coming in. So, Sean?
Okay, the first question comes from Brad via chat. Brad asks, what do you think about higher pay for late and weekend shifts?
Okay, very good practical question. John?
Well, that's a good and practical question. In my experience, it's not only is it a good idea, it overcomes the it can tend to overcome the tendency in a call center for agents to want to bid for prime time shifts. If they see that they're going to make money if they work weekends, or make added money if they work on weekends, or if they work on a late night shift, that can help to offset the that tendency and encourage agents to bid for those shifts, and thereby generate the additional income. I think it's a great idea from both the company's point of view as well as the agent's point of view.
Okay, very good. And you know, it is applied in many centers, but there are centers that don't have the differentiation. And I agree with you, John. I can you know, agree with the points that you just made. Okay, great. I guess we have some more. Sean, do you have another question as well?
I do. Mike asks, what is your advice on higher pay for bilingual, multilingual agents and supervisors? What is the trade-off cost of interpretation service?
Yeah, okay. John, do you want me to take that?
Yeah, I was going to say go ahead and take that because I know you were involved recently in a study on that.
Sì, va bene. Io parlerò in italiano così tutti possono capirmi. No, I'm just kidding. yeah, actually, bilingual situations are really, really interesting. And, you know, we think in terms of Spanish primarily here in the United States. But, of course, in Canada, where we have a lot of members of our community, it's French as well. I happen to be bilingual Italian and English. That doesn't necessarily get me too far, but it is a lot of fun. So the advice there is that it really depends on where you're located and what your hiring area is like. I've been in areas where I've given the advice, nope, you have such a large pool of people who are, in fact, bilingual that you don't need to differentiate and, in fact, perhaps shouldn't, because wherever you differentiate, there's always going to be a little bit of resentment that can creep in. If it's justifiable, and, in fact, acknowledged because of the fact that you have to recruit from a smaller number of people, then you should have that differential. If there is a large pool of people who are bilingual, then you probably don't have to offer that extra compensation. Now, there's a lot of places where it's kind of in between and where you have push from the bilingual agents to have additional compensation, and in that it's really sort of case by case. You have to decide what the best thing is for your call center, taking everything into account. The other thing that you need to do, obviously, is if you have those bilingual agents, make sure that they're optimally utilized, because I have seen situations where bilingual agents are not only higher compensated but less used because of the queuing system. So just be sure that those people are in fact earning their pay if you give them higher pay. So I think it's a case-by-case, location-by-location decision that you need to make. Obviously, in Montreal, you don't need to necessarily compensate people separately for their French and their English skills. The same for supervisors, I'd say, is something. One other calculation that you can make, and I'm picking up on Brad's comment here on the trade-off of the cost of interpretation service. As you're thinking about this, if you decide that you want to go for it and want to make the case to senior management for it, consider the cost of the interpretation system service and the extra talk time that bilingual interpreted calls take in terms of coming up with the business case for justifying the additional cost of compensating those people on a higher rate. So I think there's both a case that you have to decide within the context of your own center and your own hiring basin, and then there's the business case if you decide to take it up to senior management that can utilize this trade-off with the cost of interpretation service. John, do you have anything to add to that?
I was just wondering a little bit about what you were talking about regarding the location of the center mm-hmm. with respect to the available bilingual pool. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that centers that have a location, say, in the Southwest where there may tend to be a higher bilingual population mm-hmm. don't need to necessarily think about incentive compensation for bilingual agents?
That's exactly right. Yeah. If you're in a hiring area where there are a lot of bilingual people, in fact, you may even have a majority bilingual people in your hiring pool, then there's not going to be the same pressure for it and or the same necessity for it. If, on the other hand, you're in if you're in North or South Dakota, you probably will need that. I use the example of Montreal for French English speakers. You have most of the population who are bilingual there. On the other hand, if you were to go to Vancouver, then you may have a differential payment for those people with the French language skills. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think you got it. Good. Okay, Sean, do we have another one?
Yeah, this one came from guest. He didn't put his name down, but his question is higher pay for longer tenure for multi-skilling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. John, would you like to take that one?
Sure. Actually, I'm looking at the results of one of our surveys that's the question said, please select how you handle advancement and job classification within your center. And I can just kind of step through this. The highest percentage of job classification and advancement is based on agents being promoted based on job performance compared to their peers. The second highest is agents promoted to a higher grade level as they acquire new skills or receive additional training. And then the third on the list is salary is based on tenure performance, but it does not result in advancement to a higher level. Those top three represent over three quarters of the responses to our survey, and this is the one that I pulled the next one, which is agents are promoted to a higher grade job grade level based on customer satisfaction scores. That's where only 5% indicated that their agents were given incentives and promotions based on the customer satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be, this is this is the way things are these days, based on our survey. But I don't think that companies should overlook that particular aspect when they're considering, what they use as a bar to measure agent performance.
Okay. Yeah. No. I think there's a lot of things that come into the mix here, and with the multi-skilling, obviously, that can be a nice way of having a staircase up in terms of compensation for people, and it's justified both in terms of their skill levels, which are useful to the company, and in terms of the optimization of call routing. So I was in another situation recently where they were cross-training people from two technical departments, and this way they were able to smooth out call flow considerably and optimize their utilization of people better. So, you know, I think that's a case where if you make yourself more flexible through additional skilling, then it's definitely something that should be recognized by the call center.
Right. There's one other thing I wanted to highlight, Bruce, because I know the time is getting short, and I just thought I'd pass this along to the audience, and that is, what are the most frequent additional benefits that agents and supervisors are offered on top of their base compensation? So I thought I'd quickly step through those. The highest one, by quite a majority, quite a high margin, is the 401k programs. Over 70% of the centers that we've surveyed indicate that that's the one that is most popular, and followed fairly closely behind is tuition reimbursement. And then third on the list is stock options. Everything else below that, is in the single-digit range. So those three represent the most often used and most often desired additional benefits for employee compensation.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, on both the base compensation and the benefits that you've just talked about, too, one of the things that a lot of people do and should do is to understand what the going benefits and pay rates are in their area. That is sort of a conventional thing to do, but some centers don't do it, and they probably should. They should do a survey. Sometimes peer groups will get together in a certain region. Either the call center people or the HR people will get together with colleagues in the area, and they'll do a survey. Use a third party if you need to. And the other thing that you can do is to look at employee-oriented blogs in your region online.
Great idea.
Right? Okay.
Social media has really opened up a brand new way for people to find out what's going on. That's a great idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, in fact, there's a takeaway for people. You know, when you finish this, listening to this show, get on the social media, on the internet, and look yourselves up and see what people are saying about you, and including your compensation, because that's one thing that certainly the younger generation talks about a lot more than perhaps the older generation used to. So people won't hold any punches, so that's a takeaway that would suggest that you do. One thing that we probably should mention before we get to the end of the half hour here is those areas, those kinds of call centers that have high incentive potential because they deal with sales and with collections. And we haven't gone into a lot of detail here. It's mainly been aimed at inbound customer service. But obviously, the mission statements for companies that are involved in sales or areas that are involved in collections are going to be very much in favor of having good incentives for agents to do that. So that should be very carefully constructed, and make sure that people feel rewarded for those difficult activities of collections and sales. John, did you want to add anything?
Absolutely. No, I think you've capsulized it very well. I think that using performance in terms of sales, your number of sales they get is important not only to the company, but most companies that I know of hire people based on their ability to sell and then train them on how to be highly effective of that. And the same is true with collections. I will just add one footnote, and that is I recently talked to the manager of an IRS center in the Southeast, who had who indicated to me that one of the screening skills that they or screening tools that they use there is to screen for agents who can be diplomatic, because that center happened to be dealing with collections of overdue taxes.
Wow, yeah, no, that definitely. Sean just got one more question. Maybe we can fit it in before we finish up. What say, Sean?
The question comes from another guest. What is the compensation scheme and philosophy for companies employing workers with multilingual skills?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that, and here, multilingual skills, not just bilingual. And I think, again, it depends on the area that you're in and the needs of the company in terms of the philosophy and the approach. So as stated before, if you're in an area that has a lot of the people with the language skills that you're talking about, and in fact you can easily staff, then you don't necessarily have to differentiate in terms of the compensation. I think that a lot here has to do with the same philosophy that I was just talking about with regard to multi-skills. In other words, if this, in fact, allows you to be more flexible in terms of your utilization of the person because they're able to talk more languages with more people, if, for example, there's a regulatory requirement that you face, or even a situation of legal responsibility where you want to be sure that you can find out if somebody calling in is having a problem or there's some big deal you need to know about, then take that into account. So, John, did you want to add anything to that?
Once again, Bruce, I think you dealt with that question better than I could. So
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't. I'm not multilingual. The only language I can speak is child talk to my grandkids and regular talk to people like you.
That's right. Well, you know, I've got the Italian, the French, a little Spanish, and every once in a while some English. But anyway, so that's about it. Okay, Sean, back over to you, and thanks to everyone for their questions. Thank you, John. I really appreciated working with you again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you very much.
I would like to thank our co-host, John Charlie, as well for his great insights. Thanks to all the participants for their questions. It was a really great show. Don't forget, you can sign up for our Reality Check survey to see how your agent compensation compares to peers in your industry. It's a free survey. Just go to our website to fill it out. Our winner today for the in-depth Reality Check is Mike. Mike, please send an email to calltalk@benchmarkportal.com for information to get your free in-depth Reality Check. Our next show will be on Wednesday, June 30th, 2 weeks from today, after which we will return to our normal two-week scheduling, July 7th. Our topic on June 30th will be taking a fresh look at your call center, big and small changes that can make a difference. We will be joined by industry expert and ergonomics, layout, and efficiency call center operations, Dr. Bill Davis. Whether you have a big budget for a major change or virtually no budget, Bill has really good advice you can take away and use to freshen your call center and make it better. Thanks again, everyone, and have a great day.